Dennis McCormick, Maddie Ely, Anna Osbeck, Emily Anderson, Dante Turrieri, and Buffy St. Marie Hernandez. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and around the world at kfai.org.
This is North Star Stories, voices from where we live. Today in Minnesota.
Minnesota targets illegal online gambling sites. Then, a growing disease has hunters and officials looking for solutions. And important information for Minnesotans who don't have medical insurance through their employer. I'm Chantel Sings. Minnesota's Attorney General is shutting down 14 gambling websites. The sites include social sweepstakes, casinos, and platforms offering sports betting, poker, and other online gambling. The Attorney General's office says the website may be violating Minnesota's consumer protection and wagering laws. State officials say unregulated gambling sites offer no consumer protections, and people using the websites within the state have no guarantees that winnings will be paid out or that games are fair. In today's main story, the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources and tribal partners are strategizing ways to address chronic wasting disease, a growing concern for Minnesota's deer hunters. Maya Hecht has the story.
Deer hunting is a rite of passage or traditional life way for many Minnesotans. The recent emergence of chronic wasting disease, or CWD, is changing the way many hunt in the North Woods.
Yeah, when I first started out working for the band about 7 years ago, I always thought we had probably a decade plus before we'd even have to worry about CWD being up in northern Minnesota.
Tanya Rourke is the Wildlife Program Director for the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe's Resource Management Division.
Then all of a sudden, when there was the Cervid Farm northwest of Bemidji, it became a very real concern for us.
A cervid farm is a facility that raises deer, elk, or moose as livestock.
Chronic wasting disease, or CWD, it's a neurologic disease of the cervid family.
Eric Hildebrand is the wildlife health supervisor with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, or DNR, which has implemented statewide testing to prevent the spread of CWD and help hunters avoid consuming meat from infected animals.
So in Minnesota, we are on the front end of an infection, meaning that when a hunter harvests a deer and if it tests positive for CWD, it is a presumably healthy-looking animal.
Although the disease is not known to infect humans, officials say you shouldn't eat infected venison.
The incubation period of the disease is 1.5 to 3 years before clinical signs set in. And clinical signs being emaciation, incoordination, drooling, stumbling, and unafraid of people.
For hunters who would like to test their deer, Eric says there are a few options.
On the DNR website, on the CWD page, we have hunter mailing kits that a hunter can simply go to the website, log their information, and we will ship a kit directly to them. All the instructions and a prepaid shipping label are all provided.
For testing, hunters need to save neurologic tissue, such as the deer's head or lymph nodes, which can be frozen prior to testing. If hunters would rather not deal with the mail,
they could contact any DNR wildlife office across the state and set up a time to meet with the staff there and get the sample pulled from their harvest.
This year, over 7,000 deer have been tested across Minnesota in collaboration with 5 of the 11 tribal nations that share its geography. Tanya Rourke says,
a large part of that success was because of all the tribes coming together and starting up this tribal CWD network.
A major focus of that network is proper disposal, because CWD prions, the molecular protein that causes illness, remain infectious in soil even after a deer decomposes.
It is hard when you're used to putting the animal back to the environment. You want to give that back to nature. It's a big risk to do that when you're dealing with CWD.
Instead, DNR and tribal nations are providing dumpsters for infected carcasses. Statewide testing and disposal locations are available online at the DNR's website. Maya Hecht for North Star Stories.
You are listening to North Star Stories. MenSure, the official health insurance marketplace for Minnesota, has officially opened enrollment for 2026 health insurance, giving Minnesotans without employer coverage a chance to compare plans and access financial help. Farmers, small business owners, early retirees, and others can use MenSure to estimate costs and see if they qualify for tax credits. Coverage starting January 1, 2026 requires enrollment by December 15th, while coverage beginning February 1st must be selected by January 15, 2026. Minnesotans can get applications and enrollment help from health insurance experts at no cost at the MenSure website.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
In today's broadcast, several Minnesota counties are assisting federal immigration enforcement efforts. Then, as families gather to give thanks, we uncover some little-known facts about our state's turkey industry and information about a new tree disease impacting the state. I'm Gracie J. 8 Minnesota counties have signed agreements with Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, to help identify and remove people who may be subject to deportation. According to the ICE website, the sheriff's offices in Cass, Crow Wing, Freeborn, Itasca, Jackson, Candiohi, Mille Lacs, and Sherburne counties are now partnering with ICE. The program allows certain federal immigration officer duties to be delegated to local law enforcement under ICE oversight. The agreements come as ICE ramps up enforcement efforts nationwide and here in Minnesota. Next, from family farms to presidential pardons, Zan Holston looks at some ways Minnesota tops the turkey industry's pecking order.
Most Minnesota turkeys go from farm to freezer to food on the table. But for the last 15 years, 5 sets of Minnesota toms, that's what adult male turkeys are called, have had their lives spared.
Based on your temperament and commitment to being productive members of society, I hereby pardon Peach and Blossom.
In 2024, President Biden pardoned Minnesota birds Peach and Blossom. The year before, it was Liberty and Belle. In fact, over the past 15 years, 5 sets of the pardoned birds were raised in Minnesota. A year on, and Blossom and Peach are living the good life at Farm America in Waseca, where program coordinator Carrie Wadd looks after them.
They're in a beautiful coop in our 1930s farmyard during the warm season months.
They go for daily walks, they get student visitors, and they've got a swank little home.
It's a glorified, I would say, like an ice fishing house. Fully finished, windows, door, has a little ramp that they have to go in and out.
It's not surprising that Minnesota has so many birds pardoned. It's the United States' largest turkey producer. According to data from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, the state produces nearly 40 million birds a year from about 700 turkey farms. One of those is Erica Swatsky's Oakdale Farm in Alexandria. As a fifth-generation turkey farmer, she, her husband, and their 6 and 2-year-old daughters raise about 120,000 birds a year.
My great-great-grandmother is the one that started the turkeys on our farm.
Back then, turkeys were just a way to make supplemental income to their traditional farm. But as time went on,
each generation, you know, after her has continued on with the turkeys and expanded in their own way and kind of followed the industry.
A couple of years ago, they switched from breeding eggs to sell to hatcheries to growing turkeys for meat. And just recently, Sawatsky said she shipped out a whole flock of birds, fresh, not frozen, to grace tables.
17,000 people on Thanksgiving will be eating turkey that was raised on our farm.
For now, Sawatsky hasn't had a bird pardoned. That's an honor reserved for the National Turkey Federation's chairperson, who changes each year. But
that is absolutely a goal of mine, to be able to do that one day.
Sawatsky is also close friends with John Zimmerman, the 2024 Turkey Federation chair who raised Peach and Blossom. He invited her family to Washington for the pardon, giving her a glimpse of the moment she hopes her own birds will experience someday.
To go on that trip last year, that was our first, like, actual family vacation, and my daughters, it was their first time flying.
Running a family farm means they don't get to spread their wings very often.
But we just felt like it was so cool that their first, you know, trip on an airplane included turkeys.
Minnesota won't be getting a turkey pardon three-peat this year. The National Turkey Federation's chair is North Carolina-based Butterball CEO Jay Jandrain. But there's always next year. For North Star Stories, I'm Zan Holston.
You are listening to North Star Stories. University of Minnesota researchers have identified the pathogen that causes sudden oak death in the state for the first time. The disease has devastated West Coast forests for decades and continues to spread east with no cure available. Early detection is considered the best tool to slow its advance. Researchers detected the pathogen this summer in a sample from a plant at a Hennepin County nursery. State and university scientists will continue statewide monitoring at nurseries and Christmas tree farms.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
In today's stories, an independent review of how officials handled attacks on Minnesota lawmakers. Then, how Minneapolis residents are getting easier access to health care. And federal budget cuts force a public TV station in northern Minnesota to cancel a marquee local program. I'm Chantel Sings. State and local agencies investigating the June 14th attacks on Minnesota lawmakers have asked the International Association of Chiefs of Police to conduct an independent after-action review. The report will examine the 43-hour manhunt that ended with the arrest of Vance Bolter, who is charged with killing former House Speaker Melissa Hortman, her husband, and shooting Senator John Hoffman and his wife. The review will evaluate how agencies mobilized, coordinated, and communicated during the multi-agency response. It's expected to take about 6 months, and the findings will be made public. Next, a mobile medical unit has hit the streets of Minneapolis, partnering with local organizations to combat the opioid crisis and provide free healthcare services for all. Reporter Yancey Jameson has a story.
A mobile medical unit is on the move in Minneapolis. With the goal of expanding access to medications and treatment, the mobile medical unit reduces opioid overdoses and promotes long-term recovery for those who need it most. MJ is a nurse on board.
Mobile unit, we got a couple of spaces up here. This is our little mini medical room.
Medical exam table, our doctor's chair, just like it, and then, yeah, all of our supplies.
With an emphasis on addiction treatment, the mobile medical unit will also offer basic health screenings, medication consultations, and dental care.
So blood sugar, blood pressure, if they have any type of medical concern. A lot of this nursing, it's nursing triage. It's like, where can we get you seen to address the comprehensive needs that you have?
Other programs like the University of Minnesota's Mobile Health Initiative serve Greater Minnesota and are run by medical student and staff volunteers. The new mobile medical unit serves Minneapolis, operating 4 days a week.
So we're in the same places every week for at least a couple of weeks so we can tell people, hey, we'll be back next week at this time.
As the seasons change, unit staff are preparing to address the health concerns that come with cold weather.
So as far as right now, what the needs are we're seeing, it's starting to get colder. A lot of skin concerns, a lot of wound care. So we've really focused on getting our supplies ready to accommodate for that.
Funded with money from the National Opiate Response Settlement, the mobile medical unit requires no payment or insurance for those accessing services and is staffed by a full-time clinical team, including Tony, a peer recovery specialist.
When we're out on the streets, you know, we see people, we're trying to meet them where they are. And so we're seeing people that are, you know, they have the blanket draped over their shoulder and they're in use.
The mobile medical unit partners with local organizations, parking outside businesses in areas with high health disparities, like Little Earth and North Minneapolis.
We're trying to get that medication to people. When they're ready for it, we're here for them, and that's kind of the biggest thing. So it's anything other, any little thing you can do, if it's looking, addressing a wound with a smile, it's kind of what we're trying to do.
In addition to physical wellness, the team tends to people's mental health as well, leading with humanity and kindness.
Being able to see them as a person and not as anything else is something that we all strive to do, I think. And so showing kindness to people when other people wouldn't, you know.
Request the mobile medical unit and see the location schedule at minneapolismn.gov. This is Yancey for North Star Stories.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Lakeland Public Broadcasting Service, also known as Lakeland PBS, is canceling its long-running public affairs show, Lakeland Currents. Like 10 out of 17 Amper's community radio stations in Minnesota, Lakeland Public TV in Bemidji lost all federal funding. Lakeland Currents aired for 18 seasons, featuring conversations with local leaders and experts on a range of issues. The station says it's facing a $1 million budget shortfall. Lakeland PBS serves about 400,000 viewers in northern and central Minnesota.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
Why Minnesota may have to stop selling THC edibles and drinks. Then, a new state requirement to benefit employees is creating questions and confusion for business owners. And a funding opportunity for the state's urban farmers. I'm Gracie J. A provision tucked into the federal government funding bill could effectively shut down Minnesota's booming THC edibles and beverages market. THC is the main psychoactive compound in cannabis, and it interacts with the body to produce various effects. The measure caps hemp-derived products at 0.4 milligrams of THC per container, far below the serving found in Minnesota's drinks and edibles. Minnesota currently has 5,000 licensed retailers and generates more than $200 million in annual revenue from hemp-derived THC products. It is still unclear how the provision will affect the industry. In today's main story, as Minnesota gets ready to roll out its paid family and medical leave program, small businesses are working to understand what the new law will mean for them and what they need to do. Faya Adam reports.
Minnesota's new paid leave law is a statewide insurance fund that will offer employees guaranteed time off and job protection for medical leave. It will start January 1st, but for some business owners, there is still a lot of confusion.
Right now, I don't really know that much about it.
Matt Caron is a co-founding partner at Caron Chiropractic in St. Paul, which has 18 employees.
As I'm aware, we need to let our employees know more about it and then kind of learn more about exactly what it is and what it entails. Sounds like if someone has a need for the family leave, there are certain criteria that the state will decide if that's, you know, okay or not.
The program as itself, foundationally, it allows 12 weeks of paid medical leave. You can also qualify for bonding time. If you qualify for both of those within one 12-month period, you can only get up to a total of 20 weeks off.
That's State Representative Cedric Frazier explaining how the program works.
For some of our independent contractors, they can opt in. So if you're not employed within a particular organization, you can opt in and have access to the state program, which can be a good benefit. This is really going to be important for small businesses that can't afford to run this type of program or provide this kind of benefit themselves.
Right now, Matt Caron's clinic doesn't have a formal plan in place if an employee needs to go on leave. But he says they've handled it before on an informal basis.
We've had different people take time off for maternity and other things, and it seems like, you know, it works out okay.
The Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development website says businesses with 30 or fewer people and lower average wages qualify for a reduced premium rate. There are grants to help businesses pay for extra staff, higher wages, or training while employees on paid leave. Representative Fraser says the goal is to make it easier on employers.
The main thing that should be noted is that for a majority of employers, the program is going to be run through the state, so they can actually refer the employees directly to the department to access the program.
That's something Dr. Matt is happy to hear.
Kind of thought, well, that might be kind of good having something like that, and that seemed like it wasn't going to be a big cost.
Many businesses are now waiting for the program to roll out to find out more about how it works.
On the face of it, it sounds like a good idea, and we'll just see how it rolls out. We've talked about it like in one little staff meeting, and I don't think they understand much about it. It'll be interesting to see if they like it or not.
Employers must give workers a written notice about the new paid leave by December 1st, and the program itself begins January 1st. Find more information, visit pl.mn.gov. For North Star Stories, I'm Fi Adam.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Urban farmers can now apply for grants to support conservation-focused improvements on their farms. To be eligible, farms must be commercially operated in Minnesota and located in or selling into a city with more than 5,000 residents, or be located on federally recognized tribal land and serving tribal community members. Grant funds can cover tools, supplies, services, and other expenses tied to conservation improvements. Applications are available in English, Spanish, Hmong, and Somali, and can be found on the Urban Farm Conservation Grant webpage.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
Community members and advocates react to federal officers using chemical agents on protesters in St. Paul. UCare announces it will be closing its doors for good. And an important health warning for parents using infant formula. I'm Chantel Sings. Federal officials made several immigration arrests in St. Paul last week, sparking community protests. The federal officers used chemical agents like tear gas against the protesters, prompting community leaders to organize a vigil and call for accountability. Catherine DeSell has the story.
It's ICE, it's police, it's FBI, and it's intentionally very confusing. All of these agencies are deputized to do the work of ICE.
That's Ryan Perez. He's speaking at a press conference about reports he received from the community about a raid happening in St. Paul last week. The raid was conducted by Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, also known as ICE.
Just before 9 a.m., we began receiving reports of federal agencies preparing an operation out of Newell Park.
Ryan is an organizing director with COPAL,
Communities Organizing Latine Power and Action, a Minnesota-based organization that advocates for justice for Latine communities.
We follow our protocol, which is to deploy constitutional observers who peacefully and legally document law enforcement for the protection of civil rights.
The observers, according to COPAL's Handbook for Constitutional Observers, are a group of volunteer-trained practitioners of civil initiative. They followed federal law enforcement to Brotex, a St. Paul manufacturing facility where federal forces from multiple agencies conducted an operation.
A St. Paul dad and his brother, who would move heaven and earth to put dinner on the table for their families, were forcefully zip-tied and removed from this premises.
Protesters at the site were met with violence, tear gas, and pepper spray from federal agents.
Folks that were there peacefully documenting were forcefully assaulted and shoved by officers.
Julio Murphy Zelaya is with the Immigrant Defense Network, a group of over 100 organizations dedicated to defending and protecting immigrants.
This is an attack on St. Paul, on Minnesota. It goes against Minnesota values. It feels like federal overreach on our state. It's important for us to push back, to be saying, no, that's not what we want here.
The Immigrant Defense Network offers multiple resources on their website, including what to do if you see ICE agents, what employers can do if ICE comes to their workplace, and what rights immigrants have.
We want people to know their rights, the right to remain silent, the right to deny search, right? These are all embedded in the Constitution and extend to immigrants.
In response, an ICE spokesperson gave this comment about Homeland Security and Immigration, also known as HSI. ICE, HSI, and law enforcement partners conducted court-authorized law enforcement activity and served a search warrant in furtherance of a federal criminal investigation. There is no threat to public safety, and the investigation remains ongoing at this time. For North Star Stories, I'm Catherine DeSell.
You are listening to North Star Stories. UCare, the nonprofit health plan that has served Minnesota for 40 years, will shut down next year. The organization has signed an agreement with Medica, another Minnesota-based nonprofit, to acquire key assets and continue providing coverage to roughly 300,000 UCare members. Both health plans say people enrolled in UCare's 2026 Medicaid and individual and family plans will see no interruption in services. The deal still needs regulatory approval, and it's still unclear what will happen to UCare's employees. The transaction is expected to be finalized in early 2026. Health officials are investigating a multi-state outbreak of infant botulism tied to the ByHeart Whole Nutrition infant formula. Infant botulism is a rare but serious illness that can cause paralysis. Infants across 10 states have suspected or confirmed cases, including here in Minnesota. If a parent using formula notices their child isn't eating well, has a weak cry, difficulty swallowing, or loss of head control, they should contact a healthcare provider immediately. More information at the Minnesota Department of Health's website.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
Welcome to Minnesota Native News. I'm Marie Rock. This week, we're sharing a previously aired episode. Let's dive in. Up first, a look at music from Indigenous artists across Minnesota and Turtle Island. Deanna Standing Cloud tells us more.
The second annual Anishinaabe Music and Arts Festival was held at the Northern Lights Casino on Juneteenth. It showcased Indigenous music of all genres and art vendors.
Arts and Music Festival was designed to give our local, regional, and national Native folks a platform to play their music and put their art out there.
That's Chris Bedeau, member of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe and general manager of KOJB Radio in Cass Lake.
I think it's important nowadays that we kind of brand our own folks out here and get our names out in all entertainment, arts, crafts, that kind of thing. I feel very strongly about that as a musician myself. I find it hard to get played or airtime.
Bedeau planned the festival with support from community collaborators and funders.
And I thought it was important that we provide this particular outlet for our local talent and regional talent and national for that matter.
For Chris, it was important that the festival highlight a range of genres within Indigenous music.
We got a lot of talent with different types of genres within our culture. I like to make sure that that's expressed so the external community can understand who we are, what we are, and what we do.
KOJB has plans to continue supporting musicians in the community.
Also, we're building a recording studio down in the basement at KOJB. Off this, we're going to do an artist spotlight on KOJB. We're going to host highlight a performer every month.
For Minnesota Native News, I'm Deanna Standing Cloud.
Up next, reporter Emma Needham has more about Indigenous author Marika Moss and her new book, Sweetgrass and Soul Food.
It started as just like scratching poems down.
That's Marika Moss, co-owner of Meshkiki Studios in Minneapolis, a creative and educational studio offering workshops on traditional Indigenous crafts.
I'm going to be honest, I'm not really somebody who would run to the poetry section in like a Barnes & Noble or anything, but I would give it to my friends and they're like, that's poetry, Marika.
Earlier this month, Moss, who is Black and an enrolled member of the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara Nation, released a memoir.
It's called Sweetgrass and Soul Food. It's a play on my identity of both my Indigenous and Black side. So the inspiration was just basically there's not that much literature from an Afro-Indigenous perspective out there. So I was just like, you know what? I'll just create it.
For more information on Moss's book, find Meshkiki Studios on social media.
And I always say picking up the book is just a fun conversation with me while we drink lemonade on the front porch.
For Minnesota Native News, I'm Emma Needham.
That's all for this week's episode. Join us next time for more voices and stories that inform, uplift, and shape our communities right here on Minnesota Native News. You can find Minnesota Native News online anytime at minnesotanativenews.org. Listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, PRX, and Podchaser. You can also follow us on social media. Search us on Facebook at Minnesota Native News and Instagram and X at MN Native News. Minnesota Native News is produced by Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.
If you're in need of food resources, Hennepin County is here to help. Food shelves near you are ready with fresh, nutritious food. SNAP remains open. You can continue applying for benefits. If you're